From the LiveX studios in New York City, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Packer Transplants Live. I am Aaron Nagler, and joining me, as always, is Mr. Corey Banky, my partner here at Cheesehead TV. I am coming to you live from the Cheesehead TV podcast studio in Midtown Manhattan. Corey joins us live across the street from Lambeau Field, and we are ready to talk some Packers. What do we have on tap today, Corey?
Later on in the show, we'll be talking all things Packers draft, but first, we're going to dive into a story some of you may have seen in the Green Bay Press Gazette about the city of Green Bay and the Packers being at odds over the lease of Lambeau Field right behind me. And to provide some perspective from the city side, we are joined by the mayor of Green Bay himself, Eric Genrich. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We got a mayor on this show.
We got a mayor on the show. What's going on?
We got a mayor on the show.
Things are good. What is happening? How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Well. Thanks so much for joining us. Obviously,
and I just want to be clear before we get into it. Like, I'm not the Nicolet Law guy. There's a little bit of a resemblance. No shade.
A bit of a resemblance. Maybe this is a choice, a sartorial choice on your part, but not one in homage to Nicolet Law. We understand it, but we thank Nicolet Law for helping us out here at Cheesehead TV, as always.
Of course.
So, all right, Mr. Mayor, let's brass tacks. Let's get down to this, because obviously we're not here to get your thoughts on the Packers' first round draft pick, who that might be, who you want, although maybe we'll solicit that later on this afternoon. But clearly, yeah, there was an article there was an article in the Green Bay Press Gazette a couple weeks ago regarding negotiations between the city and the team over the lease of Lambeau Field. And I'm sure, I am sure because I got messages to this effect, that there are folks out there, Packers fans, who had no idea that the Packers lease the land, Lambeau Field, etc. What? They don't own it? Correct. They do not own it. And the only reason I knew that before that article dropped is because I'm friends with Corey Banky, who talks about this nerd stuff all the time. So I like can't escape it. But I think most people were probably surprised. So can you give us the 30,000-foot view of how this came to pass and the city's part in it?
Right. Yeah. So it's obviously a very long story. But long story short, the city of Green Bay, along with the Packers, obviously constructed Lambeau Field and opened up in 1957 after Packers moved away from City Stadium over at East High. So there's been a long-standing relationship, goes back even farther than that, right, between the city and the team. But we've had Lambeau Field as a city-owned facility since 1957. You fast forward to the early 2000s, there was the sales tax that was approved by referendum by Brown County taxpayers. The stadium district was created as a result. So that is, still an ongoing body. We have three members of the stadium district board. There's three that are appointed by the county, and then there's one from the village of Ashwaubenon. But if the Packers are interested in extending the current lease agreement that we have with the team, which runs as it stands to 2032, but either party can extend ultimately another 10 years, so that gets you to 2042. The Packers have an interest in renegotiating and extending the terms of that lease. So they approached the city actually probably for the first time back in 2019, then maybe early 2020, but as you'll remember, the pandemic hit.
Right before the pandemic, right.
Everybody, everybody had other things to attend to. So they re-engaged with the city, I think it was in 2022, made it clear that they were serious about renegotiating. So we retained outside counsel so that we could engage in a really earnest way with them. Had a number of conversations between our respective teams extending over, between 11 and 12 months. Had some, our folks felt like we had some really good conversations with them. The Packers representatives agreed to a number of items verbally. Once we received their offer, which was 5 p.m. on a Friday, which, you know, maybe gives you a sense.
Friday news dump. Very good.
How they thought we were going to receive that. A lot of the items that we thought we had verbal agreement to were not anywhere to be seen in the document. And I think the thing that's probably easiest for people to wrap their heads around and was maybe most jarring to us was the suggestion on the Packers' part that the city should take $31 million less over the extended term of the lease than we would receive if we were to simply extend those terms that we have today. So the Packers have talked a fair amount about not asking for public money. $31 million is real for the city of Green Bay. It's maybe not as real to the Packers, who are talking about $1.5 billion of improvements to the stadium that obviously we would love to see, and we would love to collaborate with them on that. But, you know, $31 million is that's real money. That goes a long way to provide police and fire and, repairing our roads and doing everything that we do here in the city of Green Bay. So that was, one of the elements that was pretty jarring to us. The fact that, as I said, a lot of the points that seem to have verbal agreement on both sides were not reflected in that. We just felt like, hey, it wasn't a tactic for us to cease negotiations. It was just a recognition of the fact that, okay, apparently we're not making any progress. So once you guys are ready to come back with a really substantive and sincere offer that we can mull over a bit, then we can get back together.
Ken, okay, I'm glad there's a lot to unpack there. And I want to start with kind of what you ended up regarding, the ceasing of negotiations and wanting the Packers to put forth something that reflects the conversations you've had over the course of the last year, which is understandable. And it's funny because we have a Cheesehead TV happy hour that happens every week. And when this story first broke, I think we had the happy hour the day after, and Corey and I were talking about it. And usually these are very kind of informal conversations. We bounce things back and forth, and Corey started yelling at me because I said, well, why doesn't the city put forth their own written proposal? Like, from what I've read, now I'm not in the negotiations, but from what I've read in Rich Ryman's article, which, by the way, anyone watching or listening here can read, there's a link in the description of this video if you want to see the article we're referencing, because that's what basically kicked off this whole public conversation.
And just to reinforce please pay for Green Bay Press Gazette subscription.
Yes, and read
the thing.
Need money.
Because the link is to a subscription, so they have to subscribe if they want to read it. Yes. So that was my first question is, so apparently the Packers have put forth multiple proposals, right? And the latest one, as you're indicating, didn't reflect some of the conversations you have had or some of the points that have been agreed upon in conversation. So why not turn around and offer up your own counterproposal?
Right. And this is kind of where I ended, where we just felt like the proposal that they offered was so unreflective of the conversations that had taken place that it really wasn't going to be fruitful to continue to engage at that level. At the same time, I've said, to the Packers since, we ended the formal negotiations a little while back, like if President Murphy wants to get me on the phone or have lunch or however you want to do it to kind of reset expectations, I'm absolutely available for that and we'll answer the call or grab lunch or whatever it might be. So it's not as if, we're ceasing communications with the team. Obviously we have a lot to prepare for on all kinds of fronts, but with the draft just about a year out, we're going to have, a lot of meetings and a lot of preparation that needs to be done on the part of the city, of course, but the team and Discover Green Bay and, businesses and residents and all the rest. So there's going to be a lot of engagement on that front and on other fronts. I'll talk to Mark whenever he has an interest in having the conversation.
Do you have to go, is this true? Do you have to go to Detroit for when the draft is over in a couple weeks and then they kind of turn it over to, okay, Green Bay, you're next. Are you there with the Packers brass?
I don't know exactly how that's going to play out necessarily. I am going over with the police chief and fire chief. There's a bunch of folks from the Packers going, of course, as well as Discover Green Bay. I think Village of Ashwaubenon and the county have a few individuals who are headed over there. I don't know when that formal handoff takes place. I had heard there was maybe something in early May where they might do something like that. But yeah, I'm not privy to some of those details.
Now, kind of rewinding here a little bit, you mentioned the stadium, the football stadium district, the Green Bay Brown County Professional Football Stadium District, I believe is their full name. Right. Can you tell people what that is and how it's part of these? It's not a part of the talks, but they are privy to the lease, and they are a major player here. Can you tell people what that entails?
Yeah. I mean, again, that's kind of a long and complicated history. I sort of alluded to it in the opening, where the district board was created by state legislation when the referendum took place in the early 2000s. Their purpose and real reason for being was to collect sales tax revenue and distribute it for the purposes of doing the renovations that took place with Lambeau Field. And so, once that responsibility has ceased, some could argue that responsibility really has already ceased. But once it's determined that their reason for being has ended, ownership of the facility returns in its entirety to the city of Green Bay.
Right. Now, there's so many kind of things. There's so many avenues I could go down here, but to the stadium district part, just because I read about it yesterday in regards to, I guess, tabling a decision about whether to, utilize a certain amount of money to build a third locker room, right? One of the complaints, I'm generalizing here, but I'm going to call it a complaint that I read about in the article from the city side, right, was that there aren't enough events happening at Lambeau Field. And I think the city is on a very fair track as far as there's a huge opportunity here that is being lost by this monster stadium sitting right behind Mr. Corey Banky, which, by the way, I find hilarious that there is literally construction going on over his right shoulder. But there is like this huge opportunity that is kind of going by the wayside. Well, does the stadium district understand the unique nature of what Lambeau Field is like, and what their relationship is with the state, et cetera? Because like, we went to London, Corey and I, a couple years ago to watch the Packers play at Hotspur Stadium. Hotspur Stadium has three dressing rooms, has three locker rooms for that exact reason, to attract outside interest, to have other things going on at the stadium besides the events it was built for. So it feels weird to me that, okay, here's something that, hey, we want to do this. We want to build stuff so that we can attract all sorts of other types of entertainment, events, etc. Yet we've got a board member saying, well, I got to find out what they do in other cities. Well, other cities are taking hundreds of millions of dollars of public money. Like, it just feels like a really odd disconnect.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't speak for the stadium board district members, obviously, but from what I could gather, I mean, they were just looking for a little bit more justification. I didn't see anything, at least reported, where they're saying, hell no, we're not interested in a third locker room. They're probably just looking for a little bit more of an argument. But to your point about, especially the city, I think a lot of community members, though, also wanting more events to take place at Lambeau Field. Heck yeah. Right. And that's a huge benefit to the community at large. It's also a revenue generating opportunity for the Packers. And we just feel very strongly that they could take better advantage of what is one of the most amazing facilities in sports to put on some fantastic events. I was at the soccer match with family and friends and had an experience.
I missed it by a day. I hate it. Oh, it looked amazing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And we had like three weather delays, like, it was still a fantastic experience. And our perspective, it's just like, Lambeau Field is not a museum. It is a football field. It is a stadium. And I think there's a way that you could better utilize it while still really protecting the field, because I know they take that very seriously, which they should.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I feel like that drives way too much inside that building.
We've got to
protect the grass. We got to protect the. Yeah, you say that, but then dudes are slipping on Lambeau Field every single game. Like, it feels like the groundskeeper has more say than some of the people who are supposedly in charge. Like,
I've
yes, you're
I've
right.
Actually
it's
been
not
told
a music.
That, by the way. I've been told that the groundskeeper is second to Mark Murphy, and I've actually had one person tell me the groundskeeper has more sway than Mark Murphy. But I do think they kind of are one in the same point.
Is Phyllis? Do you have his number?
Philosophically, I do think even this lease negotiation, and I know I'm not trying to take us off tangent, but I do feel like this lease negotiation and the fact that there's not a lot of events at Lambeau Field, despite the promises, have a lot to do with this extreme philosophy that football is the most important thing. And you're talking to somebody who thinks that Green Bay Packers football is the most important thing. But in my opinion, having lived here now for 3 years and even before, I feel like sometimes the Packers don't realize they're an entertainment complex, and like you can walk and chew gum at the same time, as they say. And it just feels like the excuse is always football is the number one thing, which all of us want to be the number one thing, but it shouldn't really come at the expense, in my opinion, of other things that are important to, you know, the fans, the people that live here, et cetera, like concerts, like, you know, these kind of things.
Yeah, and obviously I have a different perspective than the team. You know, the most important thing to me is the community, right? The fact that the Packers are community owned, you know, we would just love for them to demonstrate their community mindedness at every turn, at every opportunity. And they do a lot of fantastic things in the community. Nobody's saying otherwise. But in the context of these negotiations, you know, that's where we've, you know, pressed on them a little bit in terms of making real estate investments within the city of Green Bay, you know, making some local hiring commitments and commitments to labor standards for the workforce to really create a pipeline to a profession for, you know, for kids and teenagers and young people who are growing up here and could really benefit from a career in the trades, for example, and just, you know, more ironclad community benefits that require certain dollar level contributions to charities within the city of Green Bay. That's all stuff that they could do and billionaire owners have done in plenty of other places. And so when you look at a community owned franchise, such as the city of Green or the Green Bay Packers rather, that's the kind of stuff that I feel should sort of like come naturally to them. And we'd love for them to make those commitments.
I'm glad you brought that up. I find that it's a very interesting kind of point that you make there as far as the community ownership, right? And the ideal that they have these stock sales that certainly they have only ever, and it's what they're earmarked for, right? Made in investments within the building itself, in Lambeau Field and the surroundings, right? It's not like they're going out and doing other things with the money. Like it always goes back into the team. And I think, you know, you look at their charitable endeavors, Corey and I used to sit through it every year. I now do it. Corey never goes to the shareholders meetings anymore, but we hear
it's
from
increased.
Them about
it's
everything they do. It increases it, no question about it. But it's fascinating when you talk about the idea of investing in the community, which I think the Packers do. Now I saw your quote about, well, Titletown is across the street, right? Like it's not in Green Bay proper, which is a fair point. But I would push back a little bit only in the sense that the Packers are not city planners. They're a football team. And to Corey's point, yeah, they're entertainment. No question about it. But, you know, they aren't taking public money. They are taking money from people who are fans who want to support the team. But they're not going down the road of the Brewers who just got, what, $500 million worth of public money between the state, county, city, and are now locked in through 2050. You know, because of that, now they put in 150 of their own, but, you know, they don't go down the road of the Raiders or the Buffalo Bills. I'm sitting here in
Buffalo
New York
Bills, yeah.
As a taxpayer, helping foot the bill for a Bills stadium that I will probably never go to unless the Packers play there. You know what I mean? Like none of that is occurring in Wisconsin and Green Bay with the Packers. I think they do quite a bit as far as investing into the community. I think as the article suggested, if there are certain things that the city feels strongly about, like we could really use your help here, or here's something we're passionate about and we think the Packers could really make a push. I just think that's fair from a team that doesn't have a billionaire owner that, you know, is sitting there going, we are trying to survive through not only, you know, the length of this lease, which is probably why they wanted to renegotiate in the first place, but make sure we're fine and strong and good to go after the CBA negotiation happens in 2030 or whenever that's due to be. Actually, the negotiations probably happen 2029, 2028, whatever. But so that's the thing where I'm like, they're not city planners. I don't understand the city's desire to lock them into these things.
Yeah, and we're not asking them to be city planners, and we don't want them to be city planners, right? Well, what we're looking for is co-investment in development projects in the city of Green Bay. They're sitting on roughly, I could be off on the numbers a little bit, but $500 million in an investment fund. They have an obligation to make money on that investment fund, right? Yeah.
Right. So where they lost like $20 million last year because the market went down, et cetera. But that's, imagine that like being something that a billionaire owner can just reach in his pocket and throw at you. That the Packers don't have that. And if Jerry Jones and, Bob Crafts and of the world want to eliminate the Green Bay Packers, they want to kill revenue sharing, which, yes, remote possibility. But that is Jerry Jones' mindset, right? The Packers have that fund specifically, not just a rainy day fund. Yes, they invest in it, but that is their, like, more than just a rainy day fund. It is their ability to survive if things go south.
Right. No, totally. And I wouldn't disagree with any of that. Our suggestion is make a few wise investments here within the community, in the real estate world, in the city of Green Bay. Don't necessarily put all of that money on Wall Street. And again, we're not interested in having them behave as city planners. We've got a whole department that does that work, does it really well, takes it very seriously. We want an ironclad agreement with the team. We unfortunately aren't able to just survive on goodwill or good intentions or we'll take a look at some proposals down the line. That's not how a serious negotiation takes place.
Okay, so then I come back to why not give them a counter proposal, something that you're actually looking at and you want investment in.
Right. And again, that's where I would go back to the 11, 12 months of conversations that took place. We felt like we had some good verbal agreements in the room. The offer went back to the man behind the curtain. It came back and it was unrecognizable. Legitimately unrecognizable to what was discussed. And so again, it was just an indication of maybe not enough respect being paid to the negotiation process itself, or just not a level of seriousness that we were expecting. I don't know exactly how to characterize it, but we just didn't feel like it was worthwhile. The city has limited resources, right? And we've retained a really highly qualified law firm to engage in these negotiations. If the discussions are not going to be fruitful, it's not responsible for us to continue, paying them to have those conversations with 1265.
I'm not going to keep saying the same thing over and over, but it is interesting that's the impasse, right? That you want something that reflects the conversations you've had with the negotiating team, which I guess includes what? Mark Murphy, Popke, Ed Policy, maybe some lawyers, right? And that I don't know who would all be involved on your side, but if those conversations aren't being reflected, why not put forth a proposal that does?
Yeah. And to us, we just really need a reset. Right. And like I said, I'm available to Mark Murphy, phone call, coffee, lunch, beers, like whatever it is.
But that's how Corey, maybe this. I get it.
Maybe carry the G or two,
that can
help with
there
things.
You go.
Can you get a picture of Mark holding and carry the G need. When you meet with them, though? I need that.
We need a beer summit. That's what we need.
Right. Beer summit. I'll provide free carry the G and my house. We can use my house as a neutral site so you can look at Lambeau while you do it.
There you go. What could go wrong? I'm up for that anytime, any place. we'll make that happen. But, if we could restart things in that way, I think that's the best way to do it.
Well, Corey, I don't know if you have anything else for the mayor other than like who he wants in the first round, but I really appreciate your time, Eric.
Yeah.
You don't have to come on this Podunk YouTube channel, and you do, and I really appreciate it.
No, yeah, I appreciate you coming on. My last question is why do you think that my whole thing this whole entire time is why are we why are we dealing with the lease right now anyway? So what do you think is the impetus? What do you think is the urgency here? Is it the NFL draft? Like, what is it? And I understand, you know, Aaron talking about the CBA, right? If you really want to get the CBA, if you really want to have all your ducks in a row, you need to have it by a certain time. But, you know, why do you, I know you said 2019 and now 2022. And like, why do you think the urgency is right now?
I mean, for us, it's kind of theorizing, you know, what, from what we can gather and from what they've said publicly, they want some financial certainty long term. You know, they have certainty to 2042. They would like it farther into the future is what, you know, we've been told. So, you know, appreciate that. But from the city's point of view, the agreement that we have today is far and away better than that's than the one that's been offered to us. And so we don't, you know, we don't share the same sense of urgency. You know, we want to be as collaborative as possible, but I'm not going to, you know, lend my support to a deal that is materially worse for the taxpayers and the residents of the city.
At the moment, maybe long term, something, you know, is there that you guys can reach an agreement on and hopefully, obviously make both parties happy, but keep maybe not materially the exact same things in place, but I can't imagine that there's a road that the Packers would go down where they're going to rob you guys. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that, yes, that $31 million is going to go away, et cetera, but also their annual kind of, you know, input from what's left over from the Brown County tax, that dries up, what, 30, 31, right? When the CBA goes away, or not goes away, but changes. So, right. Like, you're talking about the impetus. They want long-term security the same way the Brewers have, right? You know? The Brewers are locked in through 2050. The Brewers took $500 million worth of public money. Like, right. I don't think it's nefarious. I think it's, you know, an attempt to try and meet the market, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah, and it's not insurmountable. I mean, I have full faith that, you know, we're going to be able to figure this out at some point. And like I said, I mean, you know, I've got good relationships with the folks over there. I think very highly of them. I think we're going to, you know, ultimately we're going to come together on this. And I'm a huge Packer fan, right? Like,
yeah, you are.
I mean, last time I was over there and I wasn't feeling that great about things, I stopped in the pro shop and spent like $130, right? Like, I just, you know, I can't resist the urge to
Who can really?
I love the Packers. I love the city of Green Bay more. And so that's, you know, that's who I'm paid to represent. That's who I was elected to represent. And that's what we're doing.
I will just point out, and I kind of absolutely adore this. As you speak to us, you're in front of a city of Green Bay sign that literally utilizes the Packers G. Like, that's how symbiotic your relationship is, you know? So that's why I feel pretty good that, yes, it's a bump in the road and things are going to be, you know, maybe, who knows, publicly there'll be some sparring. I will say before I let you go, just because I have you here and what the hell, right? How often do I get to talk to the mayor of Green Bay? Were you surprised that Mark said publicly that they were going to, and obviously this would have come out anyway, but like legit just said into a microphone, yeah, we were going to do all this stuff to the concourse and make all these improvements to Lambeau. Well, now,
yeah.
$80 million. Well, now we're not going to do that. Like, that seems so weird to me.
It did.
I mean, it wasn't shocking to me because they were sort of making that claim privately. And so we felt like that was something that they were going to say publicly if they went public with anything. The fact that they went public at all was a little bit surprising to me.
You had to have known that when you called Mark Murphy, though. You had to have. You had to know that was going to happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it was definitely a possibility, but that was a choice that they made. It's not something that they tend to want to do oftentimes. So the fact that they made that decision is interesting to us. You know, that's not how we behaved, but you know, we'll be fine.
But now because they did, you're on our show. So that's a win in our book.
All I know, this is what I said last night. All I know is that 1265 is finally watching our show. So Mayor, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I really
appreciate it.
That's the only thing that we achieved here. I think that's a win. We didn't talk about overnight parking. We didn't talk about overnight parking at all. Maybe next time, but we can hash that.
Mr. Mayor, like last time we talked about that, and I don't want to get into it.
One of my favorite rules.
Come on, let's join the 21st century. No.
No,
I want to park in front of Corey's house on the street.
No.
I'm saying, you know, we got a new city council. This conversation has come up, you know, multiple times, but we got a new city council. So, Aaron, if you want to put in, you know, a word to one of these new alders, and we'll see how it turns out.
I'm all in. But hey, speaking of parking, did you see the catastrophe the Brewers had on opening day where they had like this automated parking app that just completely didn't work?
That sounds right. That checks out.
Love it. That checks out. That's what happens when you take public money. That's all I'm going to say about that. Well, Mr. Mayor, can't thank you enough. I'm sure there's like, I talked to the Packers intermittently the last couple weeks, and I told them like, yeah, we invited them on, by the way, for sake of complete transparency here. I 100% offered up a spot, said, hey, come on board. Like, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, we can negotiate this on Packer Transplants Live. Let's
get it done, baby. Let's do it. And they declined. So, but they did say to like, do you think people will be interested in this? I'm like, well, no, Corey and I are interested in it. That's why we're going to do it. There's like maybe 12 other people that care about this.
That's reasonable. So it's your show. You can do whatever you want.
We're glad to provide them with the information. Eric, really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Yeah, great to see you guys. Really sincerely appreciate everything you do. So have a good one.
Thanks, Eric.
You too.
Take care.
Corey Behnke.
All right.
How you doing?
Wow. That was a lot to unpack. That was great. Great interview. I just want to say I was at a Green Bay Neighborhoods meeting, which is like which there's 47 neighborhood associations in Green Bay. You really want to get nerdy about this. And every month, all of the neighborhood associations have a meeting. And the mayor actually spoke about the lease negotiations. And I told a couple people at 1265 this. But the support in the city for, you know, the city side of things in these negotiations in city proper, so people that represent other neighbors, was pretty hot and heavy. So it was, it was definitely on the side of Green Bay. And now that's a small sample size, but these are people who lead the actual neighborhood associations in Green Bay. So it's very interesting. And, you know, I think the my biggest thing that I hope, and I've told everybody this, and I told Eric this, and I told, you know, all the people at 1265, is like the most important thing, in my opinion, is the 2025 draft. And it's going to take everyone here. It's going to take the Packers. It's going to take the city, the county, the state. It's going to take everybody. Like the Governor Evers said, it's going to take the entire state of Wisconsin because it's a state of Wisconsin event. And I just don't want us to get distracted away from that too much, right? Because it's going to take all hands on deck. And you know how like distracting things like this, which are important, sometimes can get you away from the things that are important. And so I just want to say that. And my hope is that, you know, my hope is they work this out in the next couple months and we just move on with our lives. Right.
I suspect they will. That's my guess. We'll see what transpires. But in the meantime, it's time to talk about the draft and it's time to reset. Let's hit it. Time for the hotness. We should have played that while the mayor was on. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, don't look now, but the draft is a little over 2 weeks away, and you know you want to know. You know you want to know everything there is to know about all these prospects, all these names, all these guys who could potentially be selected by your favorite team, the Green Bay Packers, which is why you need the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide, which is available right now. That's right. Look in the description of this video on YouTube, you'll find a link where you can go purchase your copy, get boned up prior to the draft. And true to the name of the segment, it is the hotness. It is incredible. I can't begin to describe how dope this piece of content is each and every year. Every year, it blows me away that it's literally produced by Cheesehead TV. It's so good. So good. Do it.
I'm still dreaming about Mark Murphy and the mayor at my house talking.
The mayor at your house with old drinking old fashions, hammering this out.
I'll make him an old fashioned.
Drinking carry the G, hammering this out. I like it. Let's get to some Packers news, shall we, Corey?
Let's do it.
There's precious little Packers news, but there's still some, including the fact that the Packers have embarked on their tailgate tour. That's right, the annual tradition of getting a bunch of dudes on a bus and driving around the state.
They were in Manitowoc. They went to Manitowoc. Yeah, they went to Manitowoc first.
Yeah,
they were like high
school.
One of the coaches at Manitowoc where they went is a former Packer.
Oh, very nice. There you go. So yes, the idea behind the tailgate tour originally was about like the fact that, you know, not everybody in Wisconsin can make it to Lambeau Field for a game or to go see the Packers, etc. So they embark on this statewide bus tour to. And now some of it is laid out publicly, but there's a lot of surprise visits along the way. Schools often, or, you know, nursing homes, whatever, like where they don't know the Packers are coming and they just show up and it's totally cool. And I know Kenny Clark, Rashid Walker, Elton Jenkins are the current Packers that are involved. And then they're Mike Daniels and Brian Bulaga are on board along with Alex Green. So it's a lot of fun. It's a good idea. And Mark Murphy joins them and goes around the state, and I love it. And speaking of Mark Murphy, talking to reporters this morning, Corey Behnke sure feels like we need to make sure that our passports are in order, because it sounds like there's a very good chance the Packers are opening the season in Brazil against the Eagles.
Crazy.
I mean, I'm all in, dude. You know, I'm.
Oh yeah,
let's
totally.
Go.
I can't wait. I'm totally all about it. It's just crazy how we got here, because it's like after saying that we weren't going to be here and now we're here. So,
right.
Interesting.
That's what I was so surprised when that quote came out this morning. I was like, wow, that's a change of tenor a little bit. Oh, and speaking
of
Brazil.
Also, what you talk about, I can say I can. This is not hearsay. I witnessed Mark Murphy bought things at the tent sale. So even the president of the Green Bay Packers buys things at the tent sale. Literally, as I'm walking into the tent sale on Friday, this is so Packers, right? He's walking down the stairs with a bag in his hand of like purchases. And I was just like, man, even the president of the Packers, you know, he didn't even go to the employee one.
That's little
kudos for Mark going out there with the masses and not going in the employee timeline.
No, he's got to go get that Jeff Janis jersey. Those are always on offer. You got to get your stuff when you can.
You never know. That might be the last time.
And as Murphy said, going to Brazil is most likely going to happen. And speaking of Brazil, tonight I'm going to be on with Cheeseheads Brazil on YouTube. Make sure
Cheeseheads
you check it out.
Brazil.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, they, Corey, are excited. I mean, you know, we get the tweets. We get the emails. The Brazil Packers fans are A, insanely diehard, and B, on the precipice of this actually happening. Like, it's so exciting. It's great. I'm thrilled for them. Other Packers news, some sad news. Larry Bechtel, a longtime Packers offensive line coach and NFL offensive line coach, he has passed away at the age of 81. Bechtel was Mike Sherman's offensive line coach. If anyone remembers that 2003 team that basically tore through defenses up front with Rivera, you know, all those guys up front who were just outstanding, Mike Wall, etc. Bechtel was their offensive line coach. He was incredible. He was always fun to listen to during training camp. He has passed away at 81, an NFL and Packers legend. And then in other former Packers news, Kevin King has signed with the Falcons, which I'm kind of two-pronged on this. Like, really glad he's back in the game. He took 2022 off, I believe it was, for personal reasons, just wanted to reset, tried to come back, and then tore his Achilles in 2023, which absolutely sucks. But now, back in the game, signing with the Falcons. Jerry Gray, obviously, is a coach there, so you got to think that's probably the connection. But I'll never, ever, ever forgive him for looking in the backfield, end of the first half, letting Scotty Miller just run right by him. That's it. That's what I remember about Kevin King, and I hate it.
Yeah, thanks for reminding us. Appreciate it.
Nah, no problem. It's Kevin King. He did it. Okay, so Corey, you know, before the draft, the Packers are allowed 30 visits, right, from prospects. So this isn't really Packers news, but we know as like public gathering information between like reports and basically Instagram posts from the players themselves, About half of these visits have been kind of made public. I think the Packers will undoubtedly, we'll find out more kind of throughout the next week or so. But I just want to run these down really quick because I think it's just interesting to see which positions and which guys they're bringing in pre-draft. And they're not top 30 visits, as Tazeem has reminded us. They are just pre-draft visits because, you know, there's not, these aren't the top prospects. There's lots of different reasons why you might bring in a guy to take a look, to get some medical information, get a conversation going, see what he knows about XYZ, etc. But right now, the Packers have had in Michigan's Zach Zinter, an offensive lineman, Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M. He's a linebacker who I would love to see in green and gold. We got Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State, a defensive lineman. Cornerback Jerrion Jones out of Florida State. We got Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa, a defensive lineman. Jaquan Shepherd, a corner from Maryland. Ketan Oladapo from Oregon State. He's a safety who I absolutely adore, and I really hope the Packers draft him. We got Omar Brown out of Nebraska. He's a defensive back. Tyron Hopper from Missouri, a linebacker. Amarius Mims out of Georgia, an offensive tackle. He is a mountain of a man. We got Chris Edmonds, Arizona State, a defensive back. Offensive tackle Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. Running back Ray Davis out of Kentucky, who I really hope they draft on day three. Kool-Aid McKinstry, who legit basically told the world he was visiting the Packers because he put something on his Instagram about looking at
the
eclipse yesterday.
Yeah, during the eclipse, right? Yeah.
He's a corner out of Alabama. And another Alabama prospect, Jermaine Burton, a wide receiver. So it's just interesting. Like, what do we see there? Lots of O-line, lots of D-line, corner, some safety, linebacker. Like, essentially, yeah, okay, these are the guys you would expect to bring in.
Couple of those you got to imagine are misdirections, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely some smokescreen stuff. No doubt about it. No question about it. All right. I wanted to go through some Packers draft needs with you, Corey. See if you agree, disagree, where we're ranking them, etc. Right? My number one, we got six Packers draft needs, according to Aaron Nagler. Number one, offensive line. I don't think there's anybody who would dispute that. Like, between losing David Bakhtiari, running, walking out the door with a new deal in New York, you look at, yes, they have drafted somewhat well. They got some reserves. Rasheed Walker came on, no question about it, at left tackle. But, man, I'm telling you, if they're sitting there at 25 and there's a guy they like at tackle, or even some of the interior prospects, I'm not going to be upset if they take offensive line early and often. If they take more than one offensive lineman, I'm not going to be surprised, because I think they need to kind of re-up, so to speak. I mean, remember Ron Wolf back in the day talking about, I wish I'd done more to protect Brett Favre, you know? Yep. Like, you want to make sure your guy is upright. Number two, and I know there's some, you know, maybe discussion around here as far or disagreement here, but I think it's safety. I understand they went out and paid top dollar for probably the best safety on the market. But, man, I think you gotta refill that position. You got to start over at safety. And I know Anthony Johnson Jr. definitely going to be in the mix.
Yeah.
Had an up-and-down rookie year.
I feel like you have corner next, and I feel like you switch corner and safety. But that's splitting hairs, so whatever. But
see, I'm interested to hear why you say that. Because to me, I understand that, like, corners, you can't count on – you know, what you're going to get Jair, right? Jair's locked in, number one, no question about it. And he brought back Keyshawn Nixon, most likely, to at least initially play
nickel.
The slot, right?
Yeah.
Be your nickel. I suspect they'll probably draft there. But, you know, you go that opposite kind of corner between Carrington Valentine, Eric Stokes. You can't count on Eric Stokes.
But that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. It's like you have to reset there. You kind of need Carrington Valentine, but then otherwise you're resetting, right? And you're kind of like safety too. You're resetting at both a little bit for that second guy, right? But like,
but
who's number two? Which obviously gonna come from somewhere, but.
But here's But I'm glad you brought that up, because here's my thinking. Yes, there are questions there, and you definitely need to look at corner. You have to invest there. You get at least three on the field 75% of the time. 100% with you. But man, that other safety spot, who we got? Ford's out on the market still, you know?
Yeah.
We've got Anthony Johnson Jr. and Owens went to Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, like, you still got 50% of the snaps to take here. Like, somebody's got to grab that job, and I don't see that person being on the roster yet.
It just seems like, I hear you, it just seems like safety is less injury prone, and this could be me just talking nonsense, than corner. I just feel like you go through corners faster than you go through safeties in general.
Well, the Packers certainly did last year. There's no doubt about that. I mean, some of that was of their own making because they traded Rasul, but I hear you. And that's what I was saying on a daily a couple days ago about, I mean, you look at a position where you're like, oh, this, we're set there, etc. in, you know, August. And that's great to think that or say that. But then you fast forward to October, you get a hamstring injury here, you get a broken something there, and all of a sudden you're down to your dime guy who was supposed to be your special teams ace, who's playing significant minutes in Ballantyne, right? Who they did resign and who is certainly helpful, you know, on teams and certainly gave them quality minutes from scrimmage. But that's not your plan, or at least it shouldn't be, I would suspect. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. That kind of depth, quote-unquote, can thin out real quick. Next up, I got linebacker, because I do think they could, I don't think they should or will, but they could go in with, you know, Isaiah McDuffie as their guy in the middle. I don't think they should, though. You know, I don't think that's a quality plan. No shade to McDuffie, but man, I get he's got history with the defensive coordinator. He's been somewhat productive when he's been given a chance, but man, he's not your, you know, long time Mike linebacker. Like, I would be shocked if that's a plan. I think Quay fits perfectly as your weak side guy. I don't know what they're going to do in strong side, but that's the idea that I think they got to draft some talent here. It's not an incredibly deep class. I'm fascinated to see kind of how they move forward there. Then next up, we got the move tight end spot, something I've talked about on daily. I do not doubt for a moment that they're going to be looking at tight end on day three. I don't think they put another significant investment at this position like they did with Josiah DeGuara. But, Corey, how many times have we complained on Watch Party watching Josiah DeGuara miss a block or just completely mess up a play, etc.? Like, now that he is down in Jacksonville, that's a very specific position. And I know they've talked about A.J. Dillon possibly doing some stuff there. But, man, you got to go get yourself a guy. Like a move tight, a classic move tight end. And right now, there isn't one on the roster.
Well, DeGuara was not that. I mean, I was so happy when he got off the team.
That well, they tried to make him that. Yeah, I hear you.
That made my offseason.
And then finally, running back. I mean, I know we brought back A.J. Dillon. Obviously, Josh Jacobs, huge offseason signing.
Yeah, you got to draft
again. You still need, I wouldn't be surprised if they draft not only one, but maybe even two running backs.
That's
to
crazy
kind of
talk.
Come in and come. To kind of come
I wouldn't
compete.
Be surprised. Here's the crazy thing. I think instead of two running backs, you do one running back, and they probably draft a wide receiver. Because here's the thing.
There you go.
Brian hits on Black on wide receiver. Why would you not let the guy pick?
Why would you stop? Right.
He literally picks like the greatest wide receivers in the draft. He clearly, our scouting
years,
team and
right?
Brian know what the F is going on when it comes to wide receiver. So
well,
even if it's trade bait.
That's so funny. That's so funny you say that, because the narrative for a while there was that he couldn't scout, or he or they couldn't scout skill positions. You know, because of the DeGuara miss and some of the other, like Amari Rodgers, etc. Like, oh, they don't know what they're doing when it comes to skill spots. And then all of a sudden, you turn around and in two drafts, they've created an offense. They've like built an offense with these incredibly promising guys at most of the skill positions. You know, so yeah, I hear you. Like, whatever you're doing, this newfound ability to find guys in the draft who contribute instantly, let's keep that going. I'm down with that. Finally, before we get to Blogosphere, I want to highlight something that Zach Cruz out there at Packers Wire pointed out. I absolutely love this. You talk about having a type, Corey. The Packers have a first round type. Look at this. I love this. Shout out Zach. He put this out on Twitter. So look at their RIS scores and look at their age. Like, other than Devontae Wyatt, where I got to suspect, you know, the pandemic plays a little bit into the selection as far as, and also having the two selections that draft, so you can utilize something a little bit outside of the norm when it comes to your second selection. But other than that, from Jaire Alexander all the way to Lucas Van Ness, you've got guys with RAS above 9, So 9 point something, right? And almost every single one of them, other than Stokes, is age 21. Like, Stokes was 22. Like, they have a type. They want guys who are young, and they're incredibly athletic with tons of upside, huge ceilings. I love it. So this is my point. Like, when you're there on draft night, people, and you're watching the board fall and who's available, those are the metrics you want to be looking at, because I guarantee you there's a very, 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 very good chance that whoever they select is going to fit that criteria. No doubt about it. All right, Corey, you ready?
Do it.
All right, let's do it.
This week in the Packer Blogosphere.
That's right. It's this week in the Packer Blogosphere, the return of that venerable series. Corey Behnke.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, we get to this point of the show where we're talking about the blogosphere and we highlight things that other folks are doing. People around the internet are doing all sorts of amazing things when it comes to the Green Bay Packers, but there is something historic happening here at Cheesehead TV. What might that be? What might that be, Corey Behnke? What is happening in a couple weeks on the first night of the draft?
Oh, a draft party, you say? A draft party?
The first ever in-person gathering draft party. Draft night party, Cheesehead TV throwing down on April 25th at 7 p.m. at Stage 1, downtown Green Bay at the Lyric Room. That's right. We are throwing a draft night party live and in person to become another part of our live stream. You guys know, if you've been following Cheesehead TV, you've been hanging out here for any number of years, we do a live stream all 3 days of the NFL draft. That first night is always a lot of fun. And now we are adding another level. We're going to have a physical element. We're going to have a draft night party downtown Green Bay that Corey is going to be at. He's going to be hanging out. There's going to be lots of Packers fans joining him. Come on out. You're going to have Carry the G specials. We're going to have raffles. Spencer Young's going to be there doing an art piece while we wait for the Packers to select. It's a $5 cover. Come on down, 7 p.m., April 25th, downtown Green Bay. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I don't know if I'm crazy for suggesting it, but here we go. Here we go.
It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a good time. There's going to be plenty. You're going to have a chance to – we're going to raffle off a case of Carry the G.
Maybe a few other things.
Potentially some tailgate experiences, potentially.
Ooh, tailgate experiences, you say.
It's going to be worth it. You're going to get to watch the draft. You're going to get to watch our show. You're going to get to be part of the show. Spencer will have going on. It's going to be a little community, you know.
Hang out, talk some Packers with fellow fans. It's going to be great.
Let's bring the internet to physical space.
Alive.
There will be lots of beer there.
Also, I'd like to also point out that then the next night, if you are in the Green Bay area, go down to Badger State and hang out with Ross Uglum and Andy Herman.
Yep.
They're going to be hanging out there for day two. We don't do day two hangouts. We do day one hangouts, because that's what we're about. We're about the life of live streaming all 3 days. That's how we whirl.
You are. I'm glad I got out of. Oh yeah, I guess I'm still in day two, but not day three.
Interesting. There he is. Trying to weasel out of it. Yeah.
Day three hurts my feelings. It's so boring.
So let's not do it. Why do we do it?
Well, I want to know who they picked.
Exactly.
It's just not us,
dude. You don't even know. Last year, I got a complaint because I was so upset in the seventh round that Brian wasn't trading any of the picks. And then someone emailed in and was like, how dare you? These people work so hard to make this happen. And I'm like, my guy, I just want to leave on a Saturday afternoon and go out and have a good time. Like, I can read about who they select the next morning. Let's go. But we make the commitment and we do it every year. So that's what we're up to.
Yeah. No, I'm all about it. I'm about that life.
Yeah, definitely about that life. All right, let's get to some YouTube comments, people. We got some super chats up in here, Banky.
We got We got two today. I think everybody was enthralled by our mayor interview. So Carl Van Beckham, thanks for Super Chat. Hey, guys, it's so great that you booked the mayor today. It's nice to hear a clear articulation of the city's position in the process. Thanks. Thank you, Carl. Ed,
thanks, Carl. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having the mayor on. I was really wondering about what was going on. Hopefully a hand-in-glove relationship with the city will prevail. So we got a couple Two Tree Super Chats there. Thank you guys for the Super Chats. Appreciate it.
Let's give a shout-out to our Patreon members. Patreon members, you guys are the lifeblood of what we do here at Cheesehead TV. We cannot thank you enough. The happy hours each and every week are so much fun. Thank you for coming out each and every week to hang out with Packers fans worldwide. Also, shout-out to Carry the G Club members here on YouTube. You guys are the best, and I think we're going to have a little something more for you this year during once the season starts. Might make it a little bit more exclusive, a little more special, but you know, more info on that to come. As we get closer to the start of the season. But yeah, I think we have one more Super Chat from Troy Peters.
Troy Peters, thanks for Super Chat. Random Packer, Harry Galbraith. Always remember watching Yancey Thigpen game at Lambeau with the old Packer fan next to me swearing at Harry all game. There's always...
Corey was at
the funny
game.
Thing... It was. There's always... It's one of these observations. There's always that player every year. If you go to Lambeau, that somebody's bitching about, and it tends to be the same player. It's really funny.
Like when we were at college, it was Jarrett Bush. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jarrett Bush. Yeah. He's still on my list.
Jarrett Bush.
I know everybody's like, he won a Super Bowl. I'm like, he didn't fall in the ball.
He had an interception in a Super Bowl. He had an interception in the Super Bowl.
And he could have got us to the Super Bowl, but I digress. All he had to do was fall on the ball.
You digressed.
All he had to do was fall on the ball.
NFC Championship
like,
game
oh,
at Lambeau
look,
Field.
The ball's right there. Let me just fall on it.
Lying
and the game is over.
The game all I got to do is fall on it. Well, it's not over, but it was close to over. No doubt about it.
Well, the nice thing about him falling on the ball had it happened is it wouldn't have put the ball in Brett Favre's hands in that moment. And then we wouldn't have chucked it up to fucking Jesus. And then he wouldn't have seen – he would have not missed the two wide open guys that were right in front of him. And said he got an interception and I froze my ass off and I almost got fucking frostbite.
I love Dennis and Soder both pointing out that the modern day version of Jared Bush is Royce Newman.
Oh, yeah. But
that's not incorrect. That is not incorrect. That is the dude. That is the whipping boy currently. That is undoubtedly the truth. You got anything else before we head off into the evening there, Corey Behnke?
Nope.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Packer Transplants. We'd like to thank everyone who makes Cheesehead TV part of their daily Packers routine. We are and will always be devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide.
I think it's a fluid situation, and we're I know you guys love it, especially Nagler. I can see you smirking at me right there. We're going to take it one day at a time, and just it's going to be fluid, though. That's all I can tell you.